Hey guys, just here with a little heads up. As you are listening to the beginning of the episode and at the very end, I'm going to be talking about how I'll be covering 90 Day Fiancé the other way. However, there was a storm that ripped through my area and I had no power on Monday. It's Tuesday right now. I still don't have power and I still have no access to any of my DVR recordings or electricity whatsoever. So thank goodness for Neighbors with Generators and thank goodness for Married at First Sight and 90 Day Fiancé Happily Ever After, because I'll at least have those two for you in the episode. If I get a chance to catch up on 90 Day Fiancé the other way, I'll throw it up here on the feed and you can listen to it later in the week. I'll say stay salty for now because you'll hear me just kind of drop off at the end. Have a great week, you guys. Stay salty. Hello and welcome to Reality TV. Another big week as always for you guys. I'm going to be talking about the latest episodes of 90 Day Fiancé, Happily Ever After, and The Other Way, as well as Married at First Sight. God damn, this season is so good over on Lifetime. Now, if you're looking for Love After Lockup, that's going to be over on Patreon this week, so you can check the show notes. Donna, Amanda, Lori, Jill, and Amanda S., thank you guys for being my newest Patreon subscribers. I hope you enjoy all the bonus episodes. I think I have about, 130, 135 bonus episodes. I hope you enjoy them all. Now, let's just talk about Real Housewives for just a moment. I would love to go in depth, but my issue is I'm starting to fall behind on Housewives, and that has never happened. We always have overlapping cities and seasons, but right now on my DVR, I'm behind on Potomac, Beverly Hills, and New York, and I don't know whether I should just binge them all and catch up or just savor every moment, because we're going to have a dry spell pretty damn soon of all our reality shows because of freaking COVID. What are you guys doing? Are you watching them in real time, or are you going to save them up? The reason I ask is because I was just on an episode of Friends of the Countess. Go and check it out. It is hosted by our lovely Amanda from Amanda Loves to Hate Teen Mom and my co-host of Total Request Podcast, as well as David. You might know David from, I think he's got like two or three podcasts, but he's also one of our Friends of the Facebook group. And they are recapping Real Housewives of New York from the very first season. They have not watched it. Now, they had me watch the season one finale, the one where Bethany, you know, she gets lingerie from her dad's friend at the racetrack and it's super awkward. And then Alex and Simon bring Francois and Johan to a dinner and they're screaming and they have this kangaroo jumping on Bethany's boyfriend's hamburger and Ramona's eyes are bugging out of her head. It just brought me back to the glory days when we didn't know how good we had it. And I'm starting to think I need to do that. Or maybe I need to catch up on Housewives and start on some other reality show that I've never watched. And I'm talking old school, not necessarily something that is on Netflix right now. Like, I know I need to watch Love on the Spectrum. I've heard really good things about, is it Indian Matchmaking? But I kind of want to go way back in time, you know, like at least 5 years ago, and start something that has 7, 8, 9 seasons. Reality, not drama, because I'm really not a big fan of scripted drama, although I'm getting into Breaking Bad, which probably should just jump me to the next thing here. Total Request Podcast this week. I'm finishing up seasons 3 through 5 of Breaking Bad. And although I'm liking the series more, I still freaking cannot stand Skyler White. But we'll talk about that over on TRP. And our listener request this week is one of my favorite shows, one of Amanda's favorite shows. This show is going, probably 10 or 15 years ago. It is Kathy Griffin's My Life on the D-List. Now, I understand if you think she's a little wackadoo with her politics. I can respect that. But her reality show was really before its time. It was on Bravo. We're still trying to find which episodes we even have access to watch, but it'll be pretty damn good. That's coming up this week. Last week, we recapped a first half of the season of Making a Murderer. Amanda doesn't know what to make of it. You know, is Steven innocent? Is he guilty? I don't think she knows what my opinion is yet. I'm keeping a tight lip on my opinion. We can both agree, however, that Brendan Dassey's case is such a forced confession, but we'll talk about it more over there. Now, let's just dive right into Married at First Sight, because although there are many blind items I want to talk about this week, I just don't have time. Married at First Sight was everything to me this week. This couple, Amelia and Bennett, even if you don't watch the show, I'm about 90% sure you've seen this couple's photo on Twitter, Instagram, maybe even the cover of a magazine. And if you haven't, you will be soon, because these two are unlike any couple we've really seen on TV before. They just do these improv, skittily scat scat, Scooby Doo bop bop tunes that they sing to each other, and they both know the song, although they're making it up on the spot. I don't know if I admire that, or I admire what planet they live on, or whether I should be growing annoyed by the fact that we share our planet with them. But I'm cautiously optimistic. I think I'm still liking them, even though I may be in the minority here, but I'm not afraid to express my opinion because it's my fucking podcast. I did not like the 'Twas the Night Before Christmas nightgown that Bennett chose to wear, nor did I enjoy the Michael Darling from Peter Pan onesie that Amelia chose to wear either. I mean, no hesitation in wearing what looks like either his mom's old dress or Stephen Asante's old t-shirt that he fashions into what he calls a cotton carrot. I don't know if that's just confidence or a complete separation from societal norms. And maybe that should be applauded or shouldn't be applauded. All I know is that I did not like the whole pajama situation. It just seemed like neither of them were really trying. I mean, they really lucked out that they got paired together, because even though, you know, Bennett's a nice guy and Amelia's a nice guy, when they come climbing into bed in what looks like really dirty pajamas, you're going to be grossed out. It's just so much to process so quickly. You know, you like them and then they do something really weird or gross, and then you're questioning, am I the asshole or are they the weird one? All right, now let's break down these crossover brunches that they both go on. Amelia's mom is, dare I say, enchanted by Bennett's very poor posture. He's sitting there, he's got his feet up, pulled underneath him, up on the chair, and her brother makes this analogy, like saying, when he licks Amelia like a ring pop, he licks her down until she's a diamond. Yeah. And then over at Family Bennett, it's even weirder. His sister does some sort of sleight of hand magic trick with a napkin. Ugh, I mean, require attention much. And then she gifts Amelia a blow pop. What is it with these people in lollipops? I don't want to know how many licks it takes to get to the center of Bennett or Amelia or their family's Tootsie Pops, but Bennett's mom sure wants to get down to the bottom nitty gritty of her son. She is waxing poetic about her love for him. Oh, wait, hold on a second. I got to back up because that magic trick got me in all sorts of a loopy state. First, when Bennett's sister is doing this magic trick, she comes up with a little lollipop, and then we look over and she is holding Amelia's hand, like both of her hands are wrapped around Amelia's. And then later, back to the over-affectionate mom, I believe, she's holding Amelia's hand and her husband, all three of them are holding hands across the table, a threesome of hands. What is going on? They seamlessly go from talking about licking Bennett's love lollipop to a serious conversation about Amelia birthing Bennett's possible children. And either Bennett's dad is shocked just like the rest of us because he's hearing how his wife loves Bennett so much. I mean, even if it weren't her son, she just loves every single little bit of him. I mean, more than a mother loves a normal son. Like I said, either he's just as shocked as all of us, or he can only get 7 words in edgewise because he was mute that entire meal. He was just staring bug-eyed at Amelia, holding her hand. You know, he's allowed to hold hands with his daughter-in-law, but he's not allowed to speak until his daughter across the table forces someone to participate in her crazy magic show. Bennett's sister is now my new nemesis, and I'm not apologizing for it. Just watch. She will drive all of us nuts by the end of the season. I'm calling it now. I'm her first and only nemesis until you all join me in this. Now, later, when Amelia and Bennett meet back up, they start talking about the morality or what ethics they have on having biological children. Bennett thinks that they should adopt before bringing more children to populate the earth. Whatever. Who the fuck cares? These two are digging each other, and their smiles are all over their faces and their dirty hair and their essential oil armpits, I'm guessing. And I can't even talk about Amelia's honeymoon travel attire because I don't know whether I should admire it or whether I should snark on it, because she had on what can only be described as extreme mom jeans. I mean, it was full-on fupa. There was an elastic waistband and then faux buttons where a zipper would be. I don't know why, or I can't even comprehend why she would wear something like that, because it wasn't even hipstery. It wasn't kooky. She's got a cute little body. Why wear something that ugly? Like, it's got to be more work to look that ridiculous than, oh, I just don't give a fuck. I'm going to throw on anything. It just doesn't happen that way. So yes, I realize I'm saying two things. I love them together, but they also can annoy me as well. I don't know how I feel about it, but I do think they are made for each other. Now, Henry and Christina, I am doing a Kevin McAllister aftershave moment right here. What is with this bitch? Why does she assume it's Henry's job all the time to facilitate a conversation? You know, that's one of my pet peeves. She seems to think he should be kissing her ass all the time or going out of his way to make her more comfortable when he is in the same boat as her. You know, if you see someone like Henry is too shy, then maybe you step up your game a little bit. She's sitting there saying, I really want him to make me feel wanted and attractive and desired, so I really hope that he just does that. Well, how is he supposed to know you want him to make a move? Because she's sitting there with a pillow on her lap with a little side-eye look on her face. I don't even think it's resting bitch face. I think she's just got a fucking bitchy face. If you notice, the next morning when she was eating breakfast with Henry's family, she was way more animated and way more interested in Henry's dad than Henry, which, to be honest, I was too, because that man can roast right up there with, oh God, well, I know Jeffrey Ross is pretty problematic right now, but he could definitely be a roast master. The way that he can slay his son with such ease without even putting his morning burger down. Yikes. He's on rapid fire Henry jokes 24/7, which would suck if you were Henry or any one of his kids, because he truly is the type of dad jokester that doesn't know when to stop, which is obviously a problem because it's clear why Henry is always afraid to speak, even as an adult. You know Henry III was the dad who overly delighted in volunteering his painfully shy son to go up on stage and be a magician's assistant, or the dad who shows up wearing a Halloween costume at high school to pick up his son. You know what I mean? He's amazing to watch on TV, but I really do feel badly for Henry. Christina, on the other hand, is loving all the attention she's getting from his dad. You know, she wants to talk about her traveling and show the middle of her boobs off, the space between her boobs, all day long with his family. She loves it. You know, could you close things up for breakfast on your shirt, please? I thought it was a little uncomfortable, especially after Henry's dad told Christina to dominate his son. No, that would have been my first clue, like, oh, he can go there with his jokes. All right. Oh, and did I mention that Christina's a flight attendant? You might not have gotten that because she barely talks about all of her international travel. This chick. Let's check in with Quiet Henry over there. He is meeting with Christina's family, and he is so painfully shy and quiet, and Christina's aunt is laser focused on him. She knows that there's going to be trouble brewing because Henry is not offering up any chit chat. And apparently, we find out that Christina is a big talker. Something tells me that Christina is way more like, what was her name, Trishelle in Trishelle number two than we even know yet. She was actually proud of the fact that she really bonded with Henry's friends. There's something about Henry that we need to know why women are attracted to suck his sad, shy, maybe depressed soul and other things. There's something about that. He's got a weird codependent aura that all these very strong personality women are drawn to him. Now let's fast forward to the honeymoon because they're traveling internationally, which is something Christina knows a lot about because she travels internationally. Let me repeat, Christina travels internationally to other countries. So basically, she's a local. She knows a lot about mezcal, which is why she keeps staring at the fucking camera to see if she's correct or not in what she's saying. And she also knows a lot of toasts and Espanol. Thank God she's there to guide Henry. What else would he do? Henry, have you tried your taco con carne? We're in Mexico, which is international, so they eat tacos y burritos here. You can ask me anything about Mexico because my passport has been stamped a few times, so I travel internationally. Passport, stamps, international, flights. God, Christina sucks. All right, Karen and Miles, they'll be our little palate cleanser. Well, after their wedding, they go up to their room and they get a little visit from Woody and Imani. And I thought it was so cute. Woody and Imani seem a lot more comfortable with each other. They're very laid back. It broke the tension between Karen and Miles, brought some laughs, which they really needed. I think Karen has some stronger feelings than she's letting on because, first of all, she didn't even stand up when Woody and Imani came in, which I thought was kind of rude. I mean, maybe I'm an uptight hostess, I overdo it, but I'd at least get out of my fucking bed and stand up and say hello. But no, Karen's laying there. To me, she's putting off a I need space vibe. Sure, maybe she's tired from the wedding night, but she's saying stuff like, I don't want to take off my dress. Then she's coughing very loudly and purposefully, saying she lost her voice, like she doesn't want to get too close to him. But in a strange twist, I think Karen talking with Miles's family brought her around a little bit. Now, Miles's mom is going to be the mother-in-law we need to watch, possibly a mother-in-law from hell. But I think knowing that, Karen knowing it ahead of time and knowing, all right, his mom is a little wackadoo, might bring her closer to Miles in the long run. And at least Miles's dad seemed to know his wife was a little crazy because he checked her one or two times and was looking at her like, what the hell are you talking about? You know, he was listening and he had some thoughts, didn't verbalize them too often. But I do think he probably brought him up to his wife, Miles's mom, afterwards because he's got a brain in his head and he knows you never start a fight with your wife on camera. Good man. Now, back in the hotel room later, Miles sees Karen's new braids that she put in, and I loved his reaction. He's got a really good sense of flirting, in my opinion. Like, he doesn't lay it on too thick, which for someone like me immediately makes me withdraw. He's just kind of like, all right, that looks good. I'm digging it. And I was digging him. Now, like I said, I want you to keep in mind, I believe Karen is not telling us how she dislikes Miles at this point. I'm hoping it's going to change and I could be wrong. But I think she's saying what she thinks she needs to say on camera, like, oh, I'm coming around. I think he's a nice guy. But I do think she's pulling away. First, she kept her dress on the wedding night and says she wanted to sleep in it. Then she felt sick. Remember, cough, cough. And then on the honeymoon, she said she wanted to sleep on top of the blankets. And then she kept listing the massive amount of food she just ate. Well, first of all, I'm jealous because I wish I had that metabolism. But what I heard was, I want to sleep on top of the blankets because I want as many physical barriers as possible between you and I. And if that fails, watch out because I'm going to be ripping ass all night from the massive amount of food I ate, or maybe there's like a 87% chance of diarrhea and or constipation. So Miles, back off this. Okay, Brett and Olivia. Somehow Olivia is thinking that Brett is really cute. I think he looks like the kid in the Polar Express who never got a Christmas present. You know, the one that they pick up on the way out of town. He's got the two big of boots. He looks just like that kid, but with glasses and grown up. Anyway, the next morning after the wedding, they wake up and Olivia's all smiles. She dresses up. She looks super cute. And she's got to go meet up with the Brett brothers. Why is she always getting stuck alone with these guys? Is that strange to anyone else? Like, why are Brett's sisters not there or his sister-in-laws? I would never send Dave to go meet his new sister-in-law knowing that she's going to be the only woman there. Not that they're going to do anything, you know, dangerous or salacious with her, but it's just weird. It's uncomfortable, especially when his three brothers told her that they stalked her social media and they know her now. Holy hell. Olivia, call a lifeline and get the fuck out of there. Now, meanwhile, Olivia's family is grilling Brett about his level of faith and religious beliefs. Almost as uncomfortable, but at least they weren't telling Brett they spent all night and morning stalking down his information. I will give him a little bit of credit. I'll give it where it's due. He stuck to his guns. He didn't just say what they wanted to hear. You know, he said, I'm agnostic. I don't really believe in organized religion. You got to give him credit for being honest. Now, later, they go back to the room. They learn about going to Mexico. And all the rules about suitcases or lava go right out the window because the suckers who are going to get the room after them will be the ones infected by all the germs, not them. Exactly. This is why the world was, is now, and forever shall be smothered in lava. You miss the point, Olivia. All right, now Woody and Amani, our two lovebirds, they are feeling the love, and goddamn, let's talk about Woody's abs. Who would have thought that little Mighty Mouse was packing a 14-pack? There were so many muscles and ripples and tendons. Maybe that's normal. I wouldn't know because there's not an abdominal muscle to be seen in this home, but I was thoroughly impressed, which leads me to believe they had a pretty good time that night. I mean, Woody's not going to kiss and tell. He said they just cuddled, but I don't believe it. I think it's just a smart move. You know, her dads are watching, dads plural. So he knows that he needs to be like the nice guy, you know? He's just going to cuddle his woman, his queen, and they're going to live happily ever after, which I do think they will, actually, because the next day, these two love each other's families. Woody's breakfast with Amani's family. I don't think anything really huge came up. I noticed that her dad was wearing this awesome suit and a bow tie. He's got that huge smile. Woody mentioned something about cheating, but I don't think it's really going to be that big of a deal because he said it was a very immature relationship. Neither of us communicated that great, but that's why he wants to be married. He wants to be 100% committed. And I don't know why, but I totally believe Woody. He's got kind eyes and a nice smile. I'm all in. Amani's family loves him. And when Amani met with his family, one of his aunts or either his mom brought up the fact that he's got a little bit of a temper, but we know how Married at First Sight editing goes. I think it's going to be one of those little things that they just like to put a drop sound effect, like a dun-dun, to make us think that it's going to be a huge deal. All in all, they're great together. So far, if I'm going to make a little prediction, I will say Woody and Amani stay together. Amelia and Bennett, absolutely, they got to stay together. Henry and Christina, no fucking way. Who else do we have? Olivia and Brett, no. And Karen and Miles. Ugh. I'm going to say yes, but I don't know if it's going to last forever. Like, they might stay together for decision day and then break up a couple months after that. That's my prediction as of today. All right, let's move on to 90 Day Fiancé, Happily Ever After. I may have skipped out on electricity in a freak storm where we lost it last week, but I didn't skip my daily ritual. Without coffee first thing in the morning, I heavily relied on my two Ritual multivitamin capsules first thing in the morning. Obsessively researched and free of all the shady extras that traditional multivitamins contain, Ritual packs the highest quality vitamins like vitamin D3, K2, magnesium, and folate in its absorbable form. I didn't know that half of all women don't even properly utilize the metabolized synthetic folate, and that's what's found in most multivitamins. And I will never, ever stop singing my sincerest, most genuine praises for how Ritual uses algae oil instead of fish oil. My stomach is super sensitive to omega-3 DHA supplements because most of them are all fish oil. It wasn't until I was pregnant and I was taking multivitamins and prenatal vitamins religiously that I thought I was having morning sickness, but it wasn't. It was just that fish oil packed in all those vitamins making me feel queasy. Had Ritual been around, I would have taken their prenatal vitamin blend and been the happiest damn pregnant woman on the planet. And trust me, I put Ritual to the test because I am a fairly regular, steadfast, intermittent faster. I don't eat until noon, but like clockwork, I take my two Ritual capsules in the morning with my black coffee, and I have never once had a sour stomach. Plus, there's a minty fresh tab in each bottle, so it keeps the capsules fresh, and to me, it reminds me of double mint gum. I even have my husband Dave taking the men's capsules now. You know, he's not super schooled in vitamins and supplements, so let's be honest here. I just have his shipped with mine, and I save on shipping by bundling them together, and they just show up magically for him to take, and he thinks the capsules look cool and taste good. Those daily changes can lead to big results for all of us. So start small today. Ritual is offering my listeners 10% off your first 3 months. Try it out, satisfaction guaranteed. Go to ritual.com/realityTV to start your ritual today. That's 10% off during your first 3 months at ritual.com/realityTV. I'm going to give you a little heads up here. I don't know whether I can keep watching or recapping the show because it's so problematic, obviously because of what's going on with Paul and Carini, but also there's not much going on that's changed, especially when we get to Michael and Angela and Sinjin and Tanya. I'm going to watch it. I'll live tweet it every single Sunday, but jury's out whether I'm going to be recapping it because there's really not that much going on with most of these couples. The other way I think is going to pick up speed, fingers crossed, so I'll keep recapping that. But this show, I don't know, you guys. And with Pillow Talk, what the fuck is TLC doing? They're now putting on Family Chantel and Big Ed. I was starting to really enjoy that show, but I will not watch if those two people are on there. I mean, who are they going to put on next? Paul or Andre? No. I'm not doing it. And no, I didn't watch when Andre and Libby were on there because they're fucking annoying. All right, now let's talk about this latest episode. And I'll start with Paul and Carini because I do feel very strongly about Carini's wish last week on social media. She said she wants privacy. And I'm about 95% sure one of the people that Paul was talking about in this episode that he was networking with was me and fellow podcasters. I don't want to be a part of this. I don't want to be part of his excuse. And to be clear, I have never ever responded to Paul's numerous messages, emails, DMs over the past, I've been doing this podcast almost 3 years. Almost 3 years he's been sending messages. Never once have I even sent it so he could see that I read it. You know what I mean? He's just kind of over in that inbox. And the reason I'm bringing this up is that I want to confirm what Carini suspected and what I suspect to be the truth. Paul is making it seem as if he's working and earning money by soliciting podcast interviews. That's not the way it works. Let's be very clear. If you are listening to me right now, free, I am doing this for free, which means I don't have money to be paying Paul or anyone for interviews. And that's why I don't interview anyone, interview the talent on these shows, because what are you going to tell me that we don't already know? So for Paul to be saying that he's following leads and he's making connections and networking by sending people messages like he sends me, he's full of shit, or he's barking up the wrong tree for money, because you're not going to find it from people who are working to keep their own lights on. God bless Karini. I hope she finds a great support system. So bye-bye, Paul. Cult Jess and Debbie. You guys, Debbie's a victim too. She's just a girl standing in front of a boy asking him to love her. How is she supposed to know breaking Jess's heart would break Jess's heart? She was just trying to tell her that she can't go around manipulating and controlling Colt's life, especially with women. Ugh, these two assholes. How quickly Colt was able to name all the things he doesn't like about Jess, all the things she says and her actions and that crazy anger that she has for him. You know, it's almost as if he was looking for a reason to break up with her. Surely Colt wouldn't string someone along just to stay on a show that pays him while he's unemployed, right? Now jump ahead to just texting Vanessa to see, you know, when or how often she talks to Colt. And surprise to no one, Colt is still talking with Vanessa daily, and Vanessa is very open and honest about this. Now I'm probably going to get shit for this. I'm ready for it. I don't think Jess did anything wrong here. I think Colt deserved way more than a little, "I don't like you, you liar." You know, Colt is crying like I've never seen her so violent before. Even Dave was watching this with me, goes, "All right, really, dude, it was a shoe and she barely hit you." Colt likes to twist things around and say Jess was so angry and ask her, "Why do you get so mean and violent?" to deflect from his own atrocious behavior. He's exploiting Jess, exploiting her family, just to get himself on the show. And for whatever reason, he finds more women who want to sleep with him because of this show. Good for Jess for telling him that she's done and leaving him there on the street. I think she should have stayed in that room, made Colt get his bags and get the hell out of there. I mean, I see in the preview she comes back, but I was cheering Jess on as she was carrying her own bags and doing her own thing to get away from him. All right, now Elizabeth and Andre. I was so upset watching this episode last night. I want to say I can't believe the arrogance, but I can believe the arrogance and the entitlement in this elitist, smug assholeness that Elizabeth's family has. But to spin it around that Andre, unprovoked, you know, for no reason whatsoever, came swinging at Charlie, come on. Yes, Andre is a hothead, but Olivia's dad and brother were not just sitting there like they're trying to say that they were just trying to get to know everyone, and whoa, out of nowhere, Andre just comes swinging. Why is he acting like this? Who are you, Andre? We don't know you like this. Fuck you guys. Chuck is the one who asks Andre's brothers and best friends, "Are you going to stick by this guy?" Yes. They are. First of all, how dare you for even asking that? Because of course they're going to. They're doing exactly what Chuck is doing, sticking by their friends and family. Chuck and Charlie are the ones who are picking fights in the name of sticking up for their sister and daughter. So why are Andre's brothers and friends allowed to do the same thing? Is it because they are not American? Their loyalty doesn't count because they're, how does he say it? Moldovan. First of all, it's Moldovan. Even I could learn that, and I was saying it wrong for a good 2 months before I was corrected, but I made sure to say it correctly from here on out. Now let's talk about Chuck sitting there, the fucking hypocrite that he is, talking about how he, as an American citizen, welcomes all guests and visitors. Lady Liberty welcomes every man and woman from every country. That's just how Americans are. Really? To the listener, by the way, who left me a review saying you didn't like my liberal politics, well, buckle the fuck up, because for a loud and proud Floridian that Chuck is, who enthusiastically supported Trump, how dare he say he welcomes foreign people? Now, as for Elizabeth going outside and berating Andre like he was the one solely responsible for everything that happened at the table, oh, what a bitch. It kills me to defend Andre because I think he's a piece of shit husband and a person, but he was not solely to blame. Her family came in there with an agenda. They wanted to start a fight. That was their mission. They wanted to make Andre look and sound like a complete failure and a liar in front of his friends and family. And maybe he is. He probably is. Well, we know he is, but they are just as bad and guilty for handling the situation how they did. She cannot blame Andre for this being all his fault. Now, Kalani and Asuelu. Oh, God, you guys. Are we sure Asuelu doesn't have some sort of growth disorder, like an overactive hypothalamus, hippocampus, or whatever? Like, it makes him look like a grown-up. Really, he's a child in a grown man's body. Like a real-life Tom Hanks and Big. Because there is no way an actual grown man will talk about getting up in the middle of the night for his nighttime poopy and then how a ghost followed him in the hall and he's afraid to go asleep at night. Oh no. This shit is the exact same stuff that has come out of my children's mouths years ago and they are now 10 and 11. How does Kalani live with this man as a husband? Like, does she have, like Tom Hanks and Big, a loft with a bunk bed and a ginormous trampoline that they go back to every night? What the hell is going on? She seems way too smart and with it than to find a way to procreate with this man. And the ghost is not even the jaw-dropping moment in this episode. I mean, there's so many to choose from. Shall we start with Asuelu's mom checking his tonsils with her own? I don't even care if that was a mouth-to-mouth kiss or if it was a mouth-to-barely-side-mouth location. It was about 14 seconds too long, and that mmm sound accompanying it was beyond disturbing. That hello that she gave him lasted longer than Oliver and Kennedy's conceptions combined. Now let's fast forward to the food trucks. I need to visit immediately. Asuelu is ordering the best of the best from every truck like he is just shitting money. Those things are not cheap. You know, he's trying to impress his mom and his sisters, and it's so uncomfortable to watch him living his best life for those 10 minutes because you know reality is going to kick him in the ass. And sure enough, he sets down all this food, and while he's celebrating, you know, patting himself on the back for making it rain, grilled cheese and pulled pork and some sort of wrap, his mom asks him how much money he's going to give her. And there was a collective gulp. Survey says $100. And we're off to the races. I think it's pretty clear his sisters and his mom are being greedy, even if that's part of the culture. And the moment that confirmed that for me was when Kalani asked one of Asuelu's sisters if she sends money back to Samwa and if she sends money to Asuelu's mom. And it was crickets. You know, maybe slow processing runs in the family, but the response of none of your business, that is exactly Kalani's business. If that sister was sending money, she would have responded immediately with, of course I do. I send XYZ every month. And interesting how Grandma Asuelu, that doting grandma, bolted out of there in a childish tantrum without saying goodbye to her grandsons that she prays for every day. I hate this situation so much for Kalani. I was super thankful that Kalani was there for her because even if Kalani were to have come back and said what happened at that dinner, I don't think anyone would have actually believed that that happened. That's crazy. Now, Angela and Michael, here we are again. Angela with zero eggs. She still doesn't want nor can tote eggs, make them, scramble them. I'm so over all of this. She wants Michael to marry her, so she's giving him hope that she might be able to give him a baby. Oh, yeah, exactly, Scout. But all the while, she knows that she's not going to have a baby. Even if she could, she wouldn't, because she doesn't want another kid. Once again, why are we watching this show? Because I don't think anyone really cares anymore about Angela and Michael, because it's just more of the same. Now, Sinjin and Tanya. Sinjin absolutely hates America, and he loves being barefoot in South Africa. That's it. He does not want to be tied down. He wants to be able to party and travel. And I think he's the kind of guy that actually enjoys living paycheck to paycheck. He likes to be transient. He doesn't want to put roots down anywhere. The thing is, he's always been clear about that. And that's how Tanya met him. And that's how she's going to lose him. Ooh, that's pretty deep. Just like cheating, right? If you met him as a transient, you're going to lose him as a transient. She's not happy right now. He's not happy right now. So I don't know why they're both boohooing about it, you know? Tanya's crying to Sinjin's family, hoping that whatever she says to them, they will tell Sinjin and change his mind. But I'm going to be totally honest here. If my brother were Sinjin, well, first of all, I tell him to get to a dentist immediately because, you know, orthodontal issues run in the family, clearly. But if a sister-in-law or a girlfriend were to come to me crying in the middle of a street, telling me about how she's trying to change him to be a married man, settling down, having babies, and I knew he didn't want that, I would be giving my brother some friendly, honest, sisterly advice that you need to get out of this before you start having kids. I think the crying to the sister and the mom is just going to backfire on Tanya, because very likely, Sinjin is talking to them about the same thing about his wishes. Yikes. All right, so let's keep watching this one. I will be live tweeting because, of course, I'm going to be watching this show, but I just don't know if it's recap worthy. Let me know your thoughts.